I'd been flattering myself that Fra Jad might want to talk to me. He had, after all, sent me off on a mission that had almost killed me 3 times. But unlike Moira, he was not the type to hang around in the kitchen post-messal, rapping with the servitors and washing dishes. By the time we were done cleaning up, he was gone to wherever it was that the Convox stowed Thousanders when not in use. It was just another reason I wanted to track down Leo. On the drive from Edhar to Bly's Butte, Fra Jad had confided in both of us, or so we believed, by dropping the hint that he was unnaturally old. If I were going to seek out Jad and take the dialogue to the next stage, whatever that might be, Leo should be there with me. The only problem was that I seemed to have sprouted an entourage. Ammon, Arcibald, and Barb. If I led those three into a meeting of the seditious conspiracy of which Leo was now part, Arcibald would black out and have to be dragged back to his cell, Barb would blab it to the whole Convox, and Ammon would report us to the Pandrums. While mopping the kitchen floor, I hit on the idea of leading them to Jessery's Lukab instead. With luck, I could shed some or all of them there. As we were informed, while trying to find Jessery, in Emmon's case by a Jija message, and for the rest of us, by coded bell ringing from a Carolyn in the precipice, Lukab had been canceled. Everything, in fact, except laboratorium and messal, had been suspended until further notice, and the only reason we still had messal was that we had to eat in order to work. The rest of the time, we were supposed to analyze the geometer's ship. The seculars had syntactic systems for building and displaying three-dimensional models of complicated objects, and so the goal now was to create such a model, correct down to the last strut, hatch, and weld of the starship orbiting our planet, or at least of its outer shell, which was all of it we could see. Ammon was proficient in the use of this modeling system, and so he was called away to toil in a laboratorium with a lot of Eda. As I understood it, he wasn't actually doing any modeling work, just getting the system to run. Those of us with theoretical training had been assigned to new laboratoria, whose purpose was to pore over the phototypes from last night and integrate them into the model. Some such tasks were more demanding than others. The propulsion system, with jets of plasma interacting with the pusher plate, was difficult even for a Jessery to understand. He'd been assigned to penetrate the mysteries of the X-ray laser batteries. I was on a team analyzing the large-scale dynamics of the entire ship. We assumed that, inside of the icosahedron, some part of it rotated to create pseudo-gravity, so it was a huge gyroscope. When it maneuvered, as it had been forced to last night, gyroscopic forces must be induced between the spun and despun sections, and those must be managed by bearings of some description. How great were those forces? And how did the thing maneuver anyway? No jets, no rocket thrusters had fired. No propulsion charges had detonated. And yet the hedron had spun around with remarkable adroitness. The only reasonable explanation was that it contained a set of momentum wheels, rapidly spinning gyroscopes, that could be used to store and release angular momentum. Imagine a circular railway built around the inner surface of the icosahedron, making a complete circuit, and a freight train running around it in an eternal loop. If the train applied its brakes, it would dump some of its angular momentum into the icosahedron and force it to spin. By releasing the brakes and hitting the throttle, it could reverse the effect. As of last night, it was obvious that the hedron contained half a dozen such systems, 2 running opposite directions on each of 3 axes. How big might they be? How much power could they exchange with the ship? What might that imply about what they were made of? More generally, by making precise measurements of how the hedron had maneuvered, what could we infer about the size, mass, and spin rate of the inhabited section that was hidden inside? Arcibald was put on a team using spectroscopy and other givens to figure out which parts of the ship had been forged in which cosmi, or had it all been made in one cosmos. Barb was assigned to make sense of a triangulated network of struts that had been observed projecting from the despun part of the ship, and so on. So 6 hours now went by, during which I was completely absorbed in the problem to which I and a team of 5 other Theors had been assigned. I didn't have a moment to think about anything else until someone pointed out that the sun was rising, and we received a message that food was to be had on the great plaza that spread before the minster at the foot of the precipice. Walking there, I tried to force gyroscope problems out of my head for a few minutes and consider the larger picture. Ignatha Forel had made no secret of her impatience yesterday evening. We'd emerged from the messel to find ourselves in a convox that had abruptly been reorganized along secular lines. All of us were like praxics now, working on small bits of a problem whose entirety we might never get to see. Was this a permanent change? How would it affect the movement Leo had spoken of? Was it a deliberate strategy by which the Pandrodrums intended to snuff that movement out? What Leo had told me had made me anxious, and I'd been afraid of what I might learn if I ever found my way to Aelis Lucub. So I was relieved that it had been put into suspended animation. The conspiracy could have made no progress last night. But another part of me was concerned about how it might respond to being driven further underground. Breakfast was being served out of doors at long tables that the military had set up on the plaza. Convenient for us, but weirdly and intrusively secular in style, and another hint that the Mathic hierarchs had lost or ceded power to the Pandrodrums.